Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our buddy Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you doing this morning?
We are doing great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Charles, so the Titans offensive line, which has just been a special level of bad all year long, gets Will Levis hurt on Sunday against Houston. They give up 7 sacks, 11 quarterback hits, can't run the ball. Derrick Henry averaged 0.6 yards per carry, which I don't remember ever happening before in his career, but I'm sure it has come close to that at some point. And now it looks like if Levis can't play Sunday, Ryan Tannehill is going to be the quarterback. I'm curious from your view, kind of looking into this thing, what do you think the market is going to be like for Tannehill once they get to the offseason and you kind of evaluate what's out there? Do you think he could be a starter somewhere? Is he a bridge quarterback? Is he a high-level backup? How do you view the Tannehill situation right now?
Well, let's see if he gets back in the saddle. You know, let's see if he can show how healthy he is. Obviously, he's been out since effectively being replaced, you know, early in the season because of the injury. But, you know, I look at Joe Flacco in Cleveland, and I think that if anything, it proves to others that a guy like Tannehill still has value. I don't know that you necessarily look at Ryan Tannehill going into this offseason. I think he's going to turn 36 this summer and say, you know, hey, that's a guy that we want to hang our hat on, but I could see him being an option in terms of, you know, backup depth, experience, and then knowing that, you know, let's see what happens in training camp, depending on what other quarterbacks are on the roster for an NFL team. But let's see how he finishes the season. I mean, if the Ryan Tannehill we saw early in the season, and again, you mentioned the offensive line, it's not like those problems won't still be there if he does end up getting the starting nod. It's going to be a situation similar to earlier in the season. So if he finishes the way he started the year, you know, it's going to be significantly diminished value for Ryan Tannehill. But to me, you know, the potential to have this opportunity, he can showcase himself for other teams out there. I think the thing about Tannehill that's good is that he's played in a couple of different systems. He's got some, I think, flexibility in terms of, you know, he's like Flacco's dead in the water. I mean, he's not able to run. He's always had heavy feet, but I mean, that has really, really gotten bad at this point in his career. I have to believe that if Tannehill's 100% healthy and I have to choose between he and Joe Flacco, I probably lean into Tannehill, and he frankly works with, I would think, more quarterbacks. How you want to stylistically run an offense? There just aren't a lot of offenses where it's like, okay, we're going to bring in Joe Flacco. He's limited. He's going to win from the pocket, but that's pretty much all he can do. I would think Tannehill still can offer you a little more scheme flexibility, but you know, at this point, clearly not a long-term starter for anybody. Clearly, at best, I would think for Ryan Tannehill, maybe he gets an opportunity to go into a camp, you know, fight out, you know, training camp and become a bridge starter in 2024. I don't think that's what any team would want to be looking for at this stage, but there's definitely a lot of value at the backup quarterback position around the league. Look at what happened with the Jets this year. I think every single contender to me going into the next rotation next year has to look at the Jets and go, let's just not put ourselves in that situation. Let's allocate, you know, $3, $4, $5 million. Look at Gardner Minshew in Indianapolis. Let's allocate enough money to make sure that we have a guy there in case our starter goes down. And it's interesting because I've even had, be careful how I say this, but you know, there were some backup quarterback situations that developed over the course of the season. And I even had a couple of people from different teams who reached out and were like, do you know why we didn't spend a little more money to secure a solid backup, so we're not in this situation? Because they got into a corner where they just didn't have experience when the starter became injured, and it potentially jeopardized their ability to stay in a playoff race. So, you know, I think you'll see teams that will be considered in contention next year. I think they'll hunt solid backup options, maybe a little more aggressively than what happened this last offseason.
The one place that I think is a natural potentially for Ryan Tannehill would be Atlanta with Arthur Smith.
Sure.
That's presuming
right.
Arthur Smith is everybody back.
Will. Yeah.
But
okay.
Yeah, there's that. But also I would also look at like a Justin Fields it could be enticing if the Bears are going to move on and they're going to take one of these guys at the top. How do you see that playing out? What is the Fields, you know, situation, the market? How much is that going to dictate a lot of other things?
Well, Arthur Smith is definitely, there's zero doubt in my mind he's coaching for his job at this point in Atlanta, because Arthur Blank gets asked, the owner there gets asked about Arthur Smith, and he says, you know, we're committed, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically says, we're committed to Arthur Smith for the rest of these games. And you're like, all right, well, that's
yeah.
That's about
committed,
you know,
this week.
Yeah, exactly. We're clearly sent a message that Arthur Smith is going to be measured, you know, to the end of the season. He did not get the sort of stamp of approval that, hey, we're happy and, you know, we expect Arthur Smith back in 2024. And Arthur Blank had the opportunity to say that. And you can understand why. I mean, they, you know, to really commit yourself to Desmond Ridder the way that they did, and I think sell ownership on it, and then for ownership to see a lot of the limitations that he brings to the table, especially when there are other elements of that offense that, look, Bijan Robinson, I understand he's a rookie, but I think everybody agrees that you can get more out of him as a player. You know, I think Kyle Pitts, you're starting to see, now there's been injuries there, but you're certainly starting to see that there is a higher ceiling than what's been achieved. Obviously, Drake London. And I think, you know, from the ownership layer, there's a question of, do we have the quarterback that can unlock some of the talent that we already have on the roster? And how much does that reflect on Arthur at this point? So, you know, you brought up Fields. That's an interesting thing. I did a piece on Fields last week where I reached out to as many GMs as I could get, basically asking, what's the trade value of this guy? Where could he end up if he is traded? And then sort of the tailing question was like, would you do it? Would you trade him? Would you draft Caleb, number one overall, Caleb Williams, or would you stick with Fields? And for the piece, I got seven GMs who responded but then like all these guys afterward, like a day, two, 3 days later, people were like trickling in with their assessments. I ended up getting 13 GMs. And interestingly enough, it was 11 to 2 were in favor of trading Fields, drafting Caleb. All of them said that the value was probably somewhere in the range of like a second rounder with some qualifiers, you know, or like a third and a fifth. And there was no first round value. It was all sort of, you know, hey, maybe it's a second rounder or a third rounder that elevates into a second, all these different things. So I think the big takeaway though was that you don't have a lot of GMs sitting there staring at him go, yeah, that's a first round pick. Now he's had enough of a progression to warrant that in a deal. When I asked where, it was interesting because obviously Atlanta, because of the offense that Arthur Smith runs, a lot of RPOs, it was such a natural sort of destination that a lot of people looked at, including the need and the scheme that is run there. And so a lot of people were pointing at Atlanta, but also quite a few said, look, the Philly offense is where he needs to be. He's not going to be in Philly. He's not going to be in Indy where Shane Steichen runs that offense. But if Brian Johnson, the OC, were to leave and get a job, that's a place that a lot of people would point their finger. Unfortunately, you know, I think the offensive struggles have probably taken the boom off him a little bit. Maybe he won't be in the next rotation. We'll see again how the season finishes. But yeah, I think Atlanta is certainly a possible destination for Fields. If Arthur were to remain, I would think that Ryan Tannehill would be a natural sort of addition there as an experienced backup. And I would even think if you went and got Fields, there would be some thought put into maybe we need to bring in Ryan too, because this is a guy that can be a quality backup, can help in a support role. If Fields were to get hurt, you know, we have an experienced guy who can step in and start for us. I just don't know if Arthur's actually going to make it. And Atlanta seems like a pretty tight spot for him right now. But, yeah, if he's employed or if he's anywhere, let's say, as an OC next offseason or next season, I think that's a place that I would be looking at for Tannehill as well.
We'll have more with Charles Robinson with Yahoo Sports coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We continue our conversation with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. So, Charles, we've talked with you about the MVP race. Dak Prescott putting up some gaudy numbers this year, and then they go out and just get absolutely shelled by Buffalo last weekend. How do you view where the MVP race currently stands? How much of a chance would you give maybe a Brock Purdy to win it? How do you view kind of the MVP race that's been really interesting to monitor this year as it's kind of shifted up and down?
Yeah, I think it's solidified, you know, going into the last three games of the season. I think you're really looking at Prescott, Dak Prescott, Brock Purdy, and then Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. And I think it's interesting when you look at their schedule. You know, Dallas has got Miami and Detroit are going to two really big games, obviously, for the Cowboys. And you still have potentially the top seed available, you know, to make a run at, depending on how San Francisco finishes out in the NFC. San Francisco's got Baltimore and the Rams. Both Dallas and San Francisco have Washington as well on their schedule. Baltimore is really the one that, you know, they've got an opportunity to be that one seed. San Francisco, Miami, and Pittsburgh to finish out the season. That San Francisco game is going to be a monster on Christmas. Everybody's going to be watching that because it feels like a Super Bowl preview between those two teams. You know, look, Miami's going to be fighting for playoff positioning. I think that's a New Year's Eve game. And then New Year's Eve day game. And then Pittsburgh to close out the season is interesting because, you know, look, the Steelers are 7-7 right now. I think they're going to want to obviously finish the season out strong. There's a lot of criticism right now for Mike Tomlin. It's going to be a big game for them, even if they're not necessarily in playoff contention at that point. So I would say out of the three, you know, Lamar Jackson's got an opportunity to really showcase himself in the next three. And a lot of people are going to look at that San Francisco game on Christmas and say, like, hey, is this, you know, is this where the MVP ultimately gets seized between these three guys? You know, remains to be seen. I have a vote, so I have an AP vote. I can't say who I intend to vote for in the MVP race, but I will say that.
Hey, yeah, no one's listening. You can say it.
Yeah, between those three, I don't know at this point, and I'm definitely going to be reaching out to, you know, people across the league who have faced them and just say, hey, help me split this up between these three, and what should I be leaning into in this particular vote? It's that close, I think, between the trio. One thing I'm curious about, I ask you guys this. So we've changed the format of how we vote for MVP now. Now it's Heisman ballot style where you basically list, you know, like your top five, right? And so this year I do think we're going to see where in the past it's always been like, you know, you see quarterbacks will win it unanimously, or you'll see a couple of quarterbacks will split up some votes, and maybe there will be one or two outliers who snag a vote. I do think you're going to see Tyreek Hill will be a guy who gets votes in the process. I think Christian McCaffrey will be another player who gets votes in the process. I'm curious what you guys think about that format. And then also, are you like me where you just sort of think at this stage, I almost feel like there should be a quarterback MVP, and then maybe, I mean, offensive player of the year has sort of become the not quarterback MVP of the league. I feel like it's whoever is the best skill position player often ends up winning offensive player of the year. And do you guys have like a problem with that? I feel like the league has turned into a quarterback league. So of course the MVP award is a quarterback award. Whereas in the past 20 years ago, it was very much a running back league. Like, you know, you'd have these dominant running backs who were capable of winning MVP, you know, whether it was like an Emmett Smith or a LaDainian Tomlinson or whoever, because it was a league where, you know, offenses were so heavily predicated on the running back position. I don't have a problem that it's become a quarterback league, but you do continue to hear this complaint from players where it's like, you know, well, geez, nobody could put a quarterback and ever win the MVP. And I get it, but that's sort of where the league is. Are you guys okay with that? And what do you think of the voting?
Well, I think the format's fine, but it's, you know, and by the way, you know, that thorough checking with people, I think that's what every Heisman voter does too. People clearly
you
know, really dig in on that and do their homework and vote for, you know, Blake Corum to win the Heisman or whatever the hell, J.J. McCarthy. Right. Now, I think, first of all, I think it's so stupid that we've ever in the NFL had two defensive players win the MVP, LT and Alan Page. I mean, it's just like the same thing with the Heisman. It should have been a Dominican Sue in 09. I voted him first. No one else. He was even on most ballots, which is just absurd. Like Aaron Donald should have an MVP by now, to me. So I just think that all of you who vote should stop being idiots and just voting for quarterbacks, okay? I mean, it's not – like, this is a great year for a non-quarterback to win. I think Lamar Jackson's the MVP, but this would be a great year. I know. This would be a great year for a non-quarterback to win it. Like, Tyreek Hill or McCaffrey, I'd love to see that. So just do – just do the right thing, Charles. Lead the charge, okay?
Well, okay, Tyreek Hill, though. Here's my thing with Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill went down, and they were still able to win a game. And not only that, Jaylen Waddle was, like, able to step into that role. It's not a one-for-one. But, you know, it's hard for me to vote for someone to be an MVP when he goes down and the team still is able to win games. I'm like,
the Tennessee game was a stark contrast of their offense with and without him.
Yeah. But also, I would say there's a certain functionality when it comes to Tyreek Hill where, you know, how much of his dependency is on how that scheme is run. And Tua, like, if we're going to sit here and call, you know, Brock Purdy a game manager, you're going to tell me that Tyreek Hill, like, I'm not saying Tyreek Hill is like a game manager or anything, but clearly they lean that entire scheme into, you know, him getting opportunities. And, like, it's just what if Tua has a down game? Doesn't that functionally erase Tyreek Hill? How can he be the MVP of a team when his success is so heavily predicated on whether or not the quarterback plays well? I think that's part of why, to me, it's such a quarterback award now, is because it's an easy line to draw straight to the quarterback. You know, a lot of skill position guys. And you could argue with McCaffrey, too, actually. He is almost like a quarterback where, you know, obviously you worry about the line and there are other factors that affect his skill, but he's an every down back. He blocks, he receives, he runs. He's almost like a quarterback in that you can draw a pretty straight line and go, a lot of his success, you see how it's predicated just on him. Put the ball in his hands, see what he can do with it, and it's easy to get him the ball. Whereas Tyreek Hill, it's like, well, you know, he's a great player, but, you know, you can scheme to ultimately shut him out. It's harder to scheme. You know, quarterbacks touch the ball, you know, 50, 60, you know, sometimes 70 times a game. They're always going to get their opportunities. There's a lot that goes into this, honestly, and I'm really, really curious to hear how people view the field this year. The defensive thing, I think, is really interesting, and Donald, certainly, when he was, you know, really playing at the highest level, certainly to me, he could have gotten MVP votes. And one of the things, the stories you don't really hear is, like, you know, I was talking to somebody with the Rams once about Aaron Donald, and they told me, like, look, when he retires, we are going to have to change our entire defense. Like, that's how good of a player he is. And, like, you don't understand. We're not replacing him. We're starting over completely because everything we do on defense is 100% built around him. And once that changes, we could completely change schemes because of one person not being in there. You don't hear that a lot, and that's probably why a defensive player doesn't get MVP votes. But that's like LT type stuff.
Yeah. All right. Here's a heck of a segue. Real quick, someone not getting MVP votes would be Jalen Hurts this year. Actually, AJ Brown, I thought at one point this year might have been in a discussion too. It looks like a bleep show right now. Where the heck is that going?
Well, I know a lot of people are hammering Nick Sirianni, the head coach right now, about the whole, well, geez, you know, late in the game, we could draw a pass interference penalty, and that's why maybe this you know, ball gets put where it gets put. I do think there's an element of, you see Nick Sirianni protecting Jalen Hurts a little bit there. you know, Hurts is not playing, I think, at his best level right now. I think really, though, across the board, the Eagles have a lot of problems. And it's not just Hurts, the defense. Obviously, Matt Patricia, what a weird situation for Sean Desai to effectively be taken out of the defensive coordinator position, but not continuing to call him the defensive coordinator, even though now Matt Patricia's shaping the scheme. He's calling the scheme for them on the sideline. He's the defensive coordinator for the Eagles at this point. Just, you know, they're struggling, I think, on both sides of the ball. Defensively, I will tell you this. You do get a window into how the Eagles function with their coaching staff. There's a reason why Doug Peterson's not there, and it was because they wanted him to have pliability with his assistants. Like, hey, let's listen to the GM and the owner when it comes to making changes. Doug Peterson's like, yeah, not going to do that anymore. I want a Super Bowl for you guys. And they're like, well, then we're going to have to part company. That's why Nick Sirianni's there now. They wanted pliability with coaches. I think that's how you have Matt Patricia's situation bubble up the way it did late in the season. And so really it's, you know, both sides of the ball are struggling. And, you know, Hurts, I'll tell you what, think of all those major contract extensions signed last offseason. Burrow, man, injury. Herbert, oof, not gone well. Hurts, geez, we're struggling right now. I mean, other than maybe like Lamar Jackson, all those big monster contract extensions, he's probably the one guy right now who's really making the team feel great about having extended him. But, yeah, the Eagles are – there's no doubt they're very, very vulnerable. But the place I would look, not Hurts, I'd look at that defense. I think the one thing you're going to see, they can't stop teams that can run the football. And there are a lot of teams in the NFC that can run the football. And I think you're going to see them run into somebody in the playoffs who's going to tear them up running the football and just – you're going to see an offseason that's going to be pretty interesting in terms of what they need to do to retool a little bit on the defensive side of the ball.
Charles Robinson, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock. Charles, Merry Christmas. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely, gentlemen. Have a good one.
Absolutely, you as well. We'll react to what Charles had to say. Take your thoughts, 615-737-1025, our phone number. Make your silly underdog picks today for your chance to win weekly prizes. You can play at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app. Silly Underdog Picks presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game.